everyone. Welcome back to Hysteria Radio. This is your host, Joe Fusaro, and this is the only place that I know of where we're going to keep talking about mental health, art, expressive arts, music, writing, anything to keep you positive and keep you going during your mental health experience or recovery. So today, I actually have a really great guest. It's somebody that I know through an organization called This Is My Brave that I've worked with. She is also an alumni of This Is My Brave. Her name is Karen Ladral. She's musician, artist, former cast member of This Is My Brave, and she currently works as the director of social media for an organization called Greater. Hey, Karen, how you doing?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. Everything's good. Everything's good. It's actually snowing here, and you know, I guess the thing about a podcast is if somebody's listening in the summer, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? It's snowing. you know, we're not live yet, so don't worry about that. Right now it's snowing and that's all that matters. And
that's right. It's snowing and it's cold and I have on my thickest grandma sweater. Wow. Trying to stay warm.
Where are you calling in from?
I live in Boise, Idaho.
Oh, okay. All right. So it might be a little colder there than it is here. So why don't you tell our listeners, how did you get involved with all these mental health organizations? Was it an experience that you went through? Was it a family member?
Sure. I guess I'll start. It goes way back to when I was a kid. Mental illness runs in my family. My mom had schizophrenia. So, you know, I grew up with it. But when you're a kid, whatever you experience is just your normal. So I didn't have any frame of reference to understand what was going on. I knew that mommy took medicine, she took lots of naps, and that was, you know, the breadth of my knowledge at that point. I know as I got older, you kind of fill in the pieces of the story. So I knew that she was hospitalized shortly after I was born. And I think she was also hospitalized when I was 5 or 6. I just remember a period where she wasn't there, and I think that I'd been told that she went to visit family. Kind of piecing the puzzle together. But we didn't really talk about mental illness in my house. It was just this elephant in the room. You kind of cover the elephant with a rug and hope it just stays there. It's what it was. When I was 12 or 13, I remember having a really short conversation with my dad, and it went, you know, your mom has schizophrenia. And I was like, okay, what's that?
Yeah.
And he explained that basically she, you know, sometimes sees things and hears things that aren't there. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, you have to remember, this was like 1995. So there was no Google. There was no WebMD. I had no way to find out more. And I didn't know that you could talk to people. I had this lack of understanding about anything. So that's basically.
Well, I think at that time, they weren't really telling you that you could talk to people either, you know? So
yeah.
They were kind of telling you, because they had to tell you. So you probably felt like you couldn't tell anybody else at the time.
Yeah. I honestly didn't even know, like I knew there were guidance counselors in my school. I didn't even know what they did.
Yeah.
So like, I didn't even know I could go talk to a guidance counselor. I'm sorry. I've got a dog in the background.
No worries.
But yeah, it was kind of a lonely feeling to, you know, have this information and have no idea what to do with it. So then when I was 14, I actually got to witness my mom have a psychotic episode. And I was involved in it a little bit. So I was playing piano in our living room and she was in the kitchen, and it was kind of an open floor plan. So the two rooms were separated by a partial wall. And so I was playing piano and I stopped and she called my name and I responded. I was like, what? And she would call my name again, and I would respond. And by the end of it, I was yelling, like, what? Because she couldn't hear me. And so finally, I went to the kitchen. I'm like, what do you want? And she goes, I couldn't figure out where you were. I thought you were locked in the closet.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, at that point, she was able to kind of explain to me how, what her experience was like with it. And it was interesting to see it in real time, you know, because she had insomnia, so she would take medicine for the insomnia so she could sleep, but that medicine would cause nightmares.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was really hard to watch her go through all of that. And then for me, I was 14. I'm a freshman in high school. And because her medication was increased, she couldn't drive. So I'm scrambling to find rides to school. And what do you tell your friends when you know, why your mom's not giving you rides anymore? So it was, you know, that stigma started to creep in. You know, it's embarrassing. It's scary. Yeah. You're in a new school. You want to make friends. You don't want to be like, oh, hey, let me tell you about all of this weird stuff that's going on.
Yeah. And I think that plays into, you know, the stigma and everything, is that we think people aren't going to be supportive, but had there been a support group at school or somebody as far as guidance, social work, psychology, that could have helped explain what was going on to you, then maybe you would have had a way of explaining it to your friends. But I can't imagine the overwhelming fear that you felt just not even knowing what was going on. I think that might have been something I don't know if I would have been able to deal with it at that age.
Yeah, it was really, it's disorienting. It's, I can't think of the word that I want to use. It's just, it's scary. Yeah, it's a really lonely feeling. And so for me, you know, I went off to college and I also have bipolar disorder, but I, you know, at the time you have this thing, but you don't know what it is. It doesn't have a name, you know? Yeah. And so I had the same, you know, insomnia and, you know, I'd have like, you know, hypomania going on. And then I just remember falling into a severe depression, but not knowing that that's what it was. I knew I couldn't get out of bed. I was going to the health center all the time going, I'm tired, please help me, doing blood work. And they're like, it's just a virus or something. We don't know what you have. And I had just no idea.
That's that's amazing. Even in college, they don't really have an awareness of mental health things. If you go there, because I went to a ton of health clinics when I was away at college, and it was the same thing. It was like, well, we think it's bronchitis, we think it's this, but I'm telling them I'm not sleeping, I'm anxious, I'm confused, and the same thing. Oh, it's a virus, it'll go away. Oh, it's not a big deal. And this is going on like 6 months now. It's like, so I'm thinking that I have like a terminal, you know, physical illness at this time.
Yeah.
I'm like, they can't figure out what's wrong. And man, and when you're living with bipolar or have paranoia or anxiety, that doesn't really help anything.
Yeah. Then you start looking up, you know, you fall down the rabbit hole of possible medical conditions online. You're like, oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that for a good year when I was out in Arizona and couldn't find anything. Came home, went to a psychiatrist, started feeling a little better, ended up going into a mental health / rehab facility because I was prescribed a ton of benzos and Adderall at the time. So they wanted to get all of that out of my system and see if that made a difference. And within a month or two, I started feeling better. I was like, wow. I've been going, it's interesting how the mental and physical can manifest in each other, you know? And I think a lot of doctors don't look at the mental health aspect, and maybe they're starting to now, but in the late 90s, early 2000s, no physical doctors, you know, were looking at mental health symptoms.
Yeah, definitely. And I can even remember walking by the counseling center on campus and thinking, you know, part of me thought I should really go in there, but I didn't, because I was like, well, how are they going to help me if I don't even know what's wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully they do, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure if, you know, if I had explained what was going on, they'd be like, oh, wow, you know, I could have gotten help a decade ago. But
they don't really advertise it. And that makes it tough for a student. But so when did writing come into play? Or when did music come into play?
Music has always been in the picture. I started playing piano when I was 5. And when I got to high school, you know, I'm dealing with everything going on at home. And I just threw myself into music. I started playing viola, guitar. I was in choruses. I played in a bell choir at church. I did anything and everything to stay busy and so I wouldn't have to go home. And so if I wasn't in school, I was at some sort of rehearsal that was for music. And I actually ended up going to college and majoring in music.
Wow. And I've been listening to your covers on YouTube, and they're unbelievable. And
thank you.
That's one of the great things about YouTube, because you know, there's good and bad about it, but there you can find some amazing artists doing some amazing things right now that you couldn't find a while back. And last night, I was actually listening to Where Did You Sleep Last Night, which is one of my favorite songs done by Nirvana ever, you know, and actually, I think the original artist is a guy named Leadbelly from, like, the early 1900s. He's, like, a gospel folk singer, yeah, but absolutely, like, on that Nirvana live album, it is one of my favorite songs of all time. And your version is unbelievable, to the point where I think I like it better, because your version makes more sense to me now than that version, you know, than I understood that version then. And it was just an amazing job. How did you pick out that song?
So actually, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. And for a while, I would put out a message of, hey, tell me what you want to hear. And so that was a request from somebody.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, I get to a point where, you know, I'll play songs and I just wanted to, like, keep me on my toes. Give me something new to work on. Give me, you know, give me a challenge. What do you want to hear? And so that's how that song came about.
And you just listen to a song and then you can play it?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, because I've always played music, but I'm the complete opposite. Like, I don't do covers. I don't want to say I can't, because if I sat down and actually tried, I might be able to, but I don't have the patience to do somebody else's song. So what I'll do is I'll play the first chord and then I'll just go my own way. I'll play a chord and be like, oh, that kind of sounds like that. And I'll be like, yeah, but I'd rather do this. And then it's terrible.
That's a cool way to do it. No, that's a cool way to do it.
It's a complete lack of patience and lack of focus.
Well, let me tell you why I do covers. So the whole being afraid to talk about things and not knowing to talk about things, you know, everyone, they talk about, like, writing music and telling your story. I was so afraid to tell my story. And I also thought, like, who would want to hear my story?
Yeah.
So I could, like, you know, I've written bits and pieces of lyrics in the past, and I could never put together a full song. I couldn't do it. I had this, like, it's like fear was that cork in the bottle, and I just was so stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's but you did end up writing a song, because I found that one too. I did some heavy research over the last couple of weeks when I found out I was going to be talking to you. So you decided to write a song, and actually I think there's an interesting story behind it from what I read, is that you went to This Is My Brave without a song, but you told them that you have. So why don't you tell us about that story?
I did. I lied. I told a big old lie. So so I'll have to go back a little bit. So with the YouTube covers, the whole reason I started putting songs on YouTube is I wanted to not be afraid of singing. Because I've played piano. I've been on a stage my whole life, but I was always, you know, the harmonizer. I was always in the background, and I've never done it by myself. I've always been on stage with my friends, and it's fun, but to get up there and sing by myself, I had never done it. And so that's how I started doing the covers, is I just figured the only way to get over this fear is to start doing it. And so I posted, you know, I'd do some covers and I'd post them on YouTube. And I ended up doing one a week. And so at the end of 2015, I looked and I was like, I have like 50 covers that I've done. And I was really proud of myself. And at that point, I had been following This Is My Brave online. And somewhere they had put a post up that they were looking for blog submissions. And I was like, well, hey, I've got a submission for you. This is so cool. I was feeling really proud of myself. And so I put together this playlist and this little blurb, and I sent it off, not ever expecting to hear anything. And right away, Jennifer Marshall responded and was like, this is amazing. Can we put you on the blog? And I was like, oh, sure. And then in her email, it was like, oh, by the way, are you a cast member for the upcoming Boise show? And I replied, no. And then, you know, I was still feeling pretty confident. And I put, but I'd love to be. And so she put me in touch with the producer and we set up a call and we were talking, and it started out, they'd wanted me to play the Sarah Bareilles song Brave to open the show. Uh-huh. And, but she also said, we'd love to have you play some more songs if you want to. And I was like, oh, that'd be awesome. And she goes, but they have to be originals. And so I went, oh, I have a great song for you. It'll be great. And I did not have any song at all. So I had about 8 weeks to get my act together and write that song.
That's funny. Actually, when Jen contacted me for the New York show, she said, I love the work, because I was putting poetry up with photos on Instagram for a couple months, and she found the same thing. She must have eyes all over the internet, because she finds and she said to me, you know, we really want you to be in the New York show, come down and audition. And I had original stuff. Original stuff was not the problem. She's like, but it's sharing stories of hope. And I was like, hope? I was like, what do you mean hope? I was like, there's no hope in my life right now. Like, everything fell apart. I dropped out of college. I lost my job. I lost my girlfriend, lost my house, lost my car, lost everything, you know, friends, family. And so I had to put something together. The poem I wrote for her, which I saw that yours is named This Is My Brave. Mine's actually named This Is My Brave too. So we have that connection. And it's okay. Actually... little bits of hope from a bunch of different poems. And then I made like one really huge poem filled with hope for her. So, but it's amazing what you can figure out when you really want to be a part of something, right? When you,
yeah, I wrote my song in, I had 10 minutes a night. My husband was dealing with ankle surgery and healing from that. And we had so much stuff going on. I really should not have done the show. But at that point, I was so excited to do it that I was like, I'm going to figure out how to do this any way I can. And so I had 10 minutes a night, and I just, you know, whatever I could do in that 10 minutes was how I pieced it together.
Well, it's an amazing.
I'm really proud of how it came out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. I didn't see your live, but I saw you doing it in your room, and it was unbelievable. I definitely recommend anybody listening to this look up Karen Ladral. Is it under Cage Music? K A Y J E on YouTube. K A Y J E. Make that clear for everybody. And it's her song, mm-hmm. This Is My Brave. It was amazing. And if you have an MP3 copy, I could actually add it to the end of this. So, yeah, we could try that. Okay. But But tell me about, this is my brave, tell me about the night before and the day of, because I know that this brings up a lot of emotions for a lot of people.
I honestly don't remember the night before. I was so busy doing stuff at home and trying to make sure my house was running smoothly that I don't remember any of it. The day of, I was so excited. It was just an amazing experience. Just the whole thing, just listening to everyone's stories and, you know, the people that come up to you afterwards and they go, me too. I totally get where you're coming from. And, you know, they start sharing their stories. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It was one of the most emotional, but I don't know. Yeah. There's really no words for it. Right. It's just an amazing experience. The emotions that I had to fight through to like get myself to go up there, but then the relief afterwards, knowing that I accomplished something, is something that I still go through when I do talks or present at other things, but I don't think it'll ever be like that, because it was the first time I had ever talked about any of that stuff publicly. And it was, the weights that were released.
Yeah.
After I just went up there and told my story about insomnia and bipolar in front of everyone, was there's really nothing better than that.
Yeah. And it's funny, so doing the show actually helped lead to my own bipolar diagnosis.
Oh, you weren't diagnosed at the time?
No, I wasn't. I knew I had depression. I knew that I had, you know, I thought I had just anxiety and depression. That's all I thought I had. And even sitting on that stage, I listened to three people tell their story. And it's funny how everyone's experience with bipolar is different. And so one woman's experience, you know, she's more on the depressed side and talks about how she just wanted to go, you know, run off and live in a cabin in the woods. And then another woman's experience talked about, you know, her manic energy. You know, she's like, people are always like, what's wrong with you? She's like, I'm just high on life. And I couldn't relate to that because I don't get that euphoria side of bipolar. My manic side is like, if you take a can of soda and just shake it all up and then let it sit there, it's just irritability and anger.
Like internal.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then the Erin, who was the producer of the show, you know, she got up and gave her story, and she's a nurse, and in her psych nursing class, they went over, you know, they were going over bipolar disorder and went over the whole checklist of diagnosis, and she outlined that in her story. And I even listened to that story and went, no, I don't relate to any of this.
Yeah.
But I did want to, just the excitement of doing the show, and I had some pretty good depression for almost all of 2016. So I was finally feeling better. Sorry, my phone just made a weird noise on me. I was finally feeling better, and I had the courage that I was ready to go to my therapist and have her help me figure out exactly what it was. And so that's actually how, you know, doing the show led to my diagnosis. I came up with this list of everything that, you know, my family history, my own personal history, everything I could think of that might help my therapist to help me. And I wrote it all down because I didn't want, I'm going to admit, like, I've gone to the doctor before and a therapist before, and it's embarrassing to tell them everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so I wrote it all out, and I gave it to her before our session even started so that I couldn't back out, and that I knew she would have to ask me about everything on that piece of paper. And so we went over everything, and at the end of it, she was like, you know, we should really check out bipolar. And I was like, we can, but I don't have that. And so we did. We went through the whole DSM and, you know, we went line by line. And when she finally got to the the manic part where, you know, it's either an elevated mood or irritability, I was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh no, I do have that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting thing with bipolar, I'm finding, is that I've met a lot of people over the last couple of years with bipolar, and everyone's symptoms come out differently. And there are so many different kinds. I mean, there's just like bipolar 1, 2, and then like cyclical in the book, you know, so there's like the three basic bipolars, but I've met an infinite amount of combinations in people. It's just, and not too many people are the same. I think my thing was, I was like, I would get internally frustrated and overwhelmed. And, you know, like you said, like the shaking up the can of soda. And then when it came out, it would come out in a way that people didn't even know what I was talking about because I had months or years. So I guess that's where the psychosis came from, because all of a sudden I'm mad about, you know, like climate change and why the stars don't move around like they used to. And people are like, whoa, where did that come from? And I'm like, well, if you only knew that this is really a manifestation of like losing everything and it's just coming out in weird ways. And, I totally understand. When you say shaking up the soda can, like, yeah, that's exactly how it would start. And insomnia was big for me. If I went more than a few nights in a row without sleep, I would start to lose my grasp. And then if it went on for a few weeks or a month, I knew it was out of control at that point. I wasn't even going to be able to control my thoughts, my emotions, my actions, nothing. You know, nothing at that point was making sense. And so sleep is huge for me. I don't know. What's your main trigger, you think?
I think sleep. I think about managing things to stay healthy. And, you know, it comes out as this boring list of, you know, I need to sleep right and eat right. And it's been, for me, the most helpful thing has been keeping track of my moods. So, you know, I write down what I'm feeling and then, you know, kind of think about, why am I feeling this way? What's making me feel this way? Is there anything I can do to change it?
Yeah.
So that, you know, I can see like, oh, maybe this is something that's going on is causing me to feel like this. And how can I react to it so that it doesn't get out of control?
So your writing really helps with your awareness of what's going on.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's, I did a lot of writing, a lot of reflecting, and I've always been my own worst judge, my own worst critic. So I think that actually helped me with bipolar, because I would criticize every little thing that went wrong in a day. And then at the end of the day, I would look at that list of little things and then I would know, all right, well, I need to eat better. I need to start socializing. You know, it's been a few days since I haven't seen people. I need to start, you know, make a couple texts, or, you know, I need to start eating healthier. I only got 5 hours sleep the last couple nights. I should really get that up to 7 or 8. And I did a lot of that over the last few years, because when I first got diagnosed, I was only writing about, this is terrible. This sucks. I hate this. Life is terrible. You know, these people deceived me. Like, it was just like this manifesto to the world of like everything that was wrong. And then I realized a few years ago, like, all right, I can use my writing and write in the other direction. Like, instead of towards the negative, I need, even though it's hard and I don't know what's positive and I don't know how I'm going to find anything positive, but I need to start writing in that direction, and maybe I could change the momentum from going to negative into positive. And so
exactly. Even if you can find one thing that's positive instead of negative, or, you know, that practicing gratitude.
Yeah, exactly. Gratitude and lists, like things that I enjoy, because after I was hospitalized for a while, I forgot what I liked. You know, I was on so many meds and had been so withdrawn from society for so long. I forgot that I liked watching a baseball game or listening to music. You know, I just, I was so focused on the illness, I wasn't focused on life anymore. And that's,
yeah,
that's the most amazing thing about writing, is that, you know, in some way you kind of do write your own story. I mean, it's not whatever you want. It's not, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, you write down, like, you know, I want this, you're going to get it. But you can really create something with writing.
Yeah, you can.
So, all right. So now let's talk about some fun stuff. Let's talk about, talk about music. You could collaborate with one person. Who would it be?
One person. Oh boy. My problem is I listen to everything, like any and everything music wise for me is on the table. But actually lately I've been listening to a lot of Pink, like her new album that came out. I think it'd be fun to work with her.
Nice. Nice. Which venue would you most want to play at?
I spent a lot of my teenage years at the State Theater in Portland, Maine. And so I would love to go play there.
That's awesome. Who would you like to go on tour with? Who would you like to open for on tour?
These are hard questions. I even tried to be prepared for these, but you know, I think it'd be really fun to tour with someone who's super over the top. Like Pink's shows are incredible. Lady Gaga, like something like that. Like the theatrics are just super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd have a huge audience for those, for the openers. You know, sometimes people don't show up for the opener, but you go to something like that and everybody's there at 7 o'clock waiting for the show. So that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Who would you choose to open for you?
I honestly don't know. I left that one blank. No clue.
All right. And you could only listen to music one way, vinyl, 8-track, cassette, CD, or MP3. Which one are you going with?
CDs. Mm-hmm.
I still think it's the easiest, but I have a few friends that just got mad at me because I had CDs and their new computers don't even have CD players. I was like, well, that's the only thing I have my album recorded on is a CD. So I don't know how I'm going to get it to people, but I'll figure that out.
I know. We're old school, right? Like we bought a new truck and same thing. My truck doesn't have a CD player.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't get it. I mean, CD players cost like $30 right now. Like how are they not just putting it in? Like, it should be a throw in. I guess we'll figure out MP3s one of these days. But
maybe.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners where we could find you?
Sure. My website is cagemusic.com. It's KAYJE music. And I'm also on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at Cage Music.
Awesome. Well, Karen, thank you very much for joining us today. I love how you're another person that I have on this show that is using writing and using music in a positive way and using it to heal, because that just amazes me that this isn't part of the routine. When you go to the psychiatrist, when you go to the therapist, you know, why aren't they making you listen to music? Why aren't they making you write? And, you know, and the more of these that I do, I'm finding out that should be part of the routine for recovery, for life. Forget mental health, just for life. So thank you very much for joining
me today. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, anytime. We'd love to have you back. So everyone, for Hysteria Radio, I am Joe Fusaro with Karen Ladral. And remember to keep the radio up, keep writing, and keep the hysteria down. Have a great day. We'll